Shopomaniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave, at home with the kids. Rupert with me is Chris, comfortable in the booth choir. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing all right. Thanks, Dave.
I only say that. It's not a problem. My kids are great. It's just, I want to give the listener and the expectation, the 90% probability that one kid will run in here and saying they have to poop. I just want to give everybody the right frame.
What's your poop percentage? If a kid says, I got to poop, pick him up, put him on the toilet. Are you talking 100% in your household?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they hold it for multiple days. So it's, so you know it's there. If it's,
we're down.
If
we're
it
down.
Got
we're
serious.
Under 50%, I think.
Oh, so it's false alarm town. Well, yeah. That's kids, man. It's funny. I'm sure like all the people without kids are like, what? This is disgusting. And I agree. But the minute you have kids, like 80% of your life is about bowel movements. It becomes just, you are now up to speed. It's a majority of you and your partner's conversation. It is like,
I wouldn't have it like, any other way, Dave.
Hey, that's good.
You wanted to, you mentioned RSS a little bit. RSS being, you know, we're, oh, just a hotter topic than you'd suspect over the years, you know, with most people in the world not caring at all and some people caring very heavily. I've just always had an RSS feed for the sites I produce. You've probably always had an RSS feed. Not only do I have them, but I have them because I like it, you know, because I like to read other people's sites in that way. And that it just seems to be like the only way to do that in a good way. You know, like I have literally hundreds of sites that I subscribe to and I cannot just visit them tab by tab every day. It's not happening. So to have a technology that, you know, aggregates all those feeds together and allows me to read it is wonderful. And there's so many apps that allow you to do that. And it's just kind of fun to experiment with the different apps that you do it. You said you just tried Reader, but we'll get to that. But what were you on before? How were you reading feeds?
So I do Feedbin, like I pay $5 a month for Feedbin, website, but then they have an app, right? And the app is just your classic, like RSS looking app, you know, it's the list of feeds. Well, yeah,
is it a progressive web app or whatever?
I assume it's like a web app because it's very similar. But so it's like a list of feeds and then you get like the list of like the summary excerpt or title thumbnail kind of list, right? And then then the article column, right? The big, almost like an email app or whatever.
They do. If you go to their website /apps, it suggests two other apps before their own, which is kind of funny. That
sort of is telling. Yeah. But I was just using that because it was the one, you know, is the service I was using. And I just was like, this is great. But, you know, I was having like, I found myself like pulling out the laptop rather than the iPad because I just was like it is easier for me to like use JK, like forward back. Like, you know, did you know like most RSS feeds or readers have like Vim key bindings? Did you know that?
But I know that I use key commands generally. I like expect that they're there, but I don't think of it as Vim like.
But so it's like you can like J and K to go forward and backwards and through the list or whatever, like up and down.
Sure.
So like I'm usually doing that in an RSS app. And I just was like, oh, it's just so much easier if I do that. But then I was also like frustrated because like part of the whole reason I bought the iPad was to like consume, do my reading. I'm Steve Jobs on the chair reading the iPad, you know, and that's why I bought it. But I was like getting like RSI almost feels from like trying to operate the app and like, cause you had to like scroll all the way through the thing, the post to get the go to next one. And the column was too far away to use my thumb to like navigate through posts. So I just was like, I'm going to try another app. And I did Reader, which is kind of a classic, I guess, iOS or Mac app, right? Reader 4.
It's been around a while, and 4 was a big update for them, I think, and it's great. I use Reader, too.
It's great, and it syncs with Feedbin, which is perfect. And so, like, and now I'm just firing through, and I think the other day, it was maybe Sunday or something, that's usually, like, when I do that, but, like, I plowed through like 1,300 RSS articles like in one go. I mean, most of it's The Verge and headlines, but like I just was like, you know, I'm just going to get through this. I'm going to go through it.
Pew. Yeah. And so, do you have these like, I feel like I have like running totals in my head that's like, this feed displeases me a little bit, you know, but not enough to unsubscribe yet. But if it displeases me next week, then I'm going to actually prune it. Do you, how pruney do you get?
I wish I was more, because I just, and this is the problem I hit probably 10 years ago with Google Reader. You just kind of become like a, attached to like the subscription. Like Kotke is a really great example for me. Like I like his posts, but I don't read them every day and they pile up. And so now I have 200 or 500
Kotke
articles. Really? And I like Kotke, is that's not the issue, but then but I know like a lot of his are like a mix of like video or even it's kind of a high investment post, you know, like his content is usually like, here's a video I watch, it's 22 minutes long, and I'm just like, that's not what I can do right now, you know, like that impedes my progress. So so I let those pile up, but that would be one like I would could like let go and then probably be happier. You know, like I like the little pieces of content, but I would maybe just be happier if I didn't know about like red pandas in southeastern Tibet.
Maybe I couldn't. I'm a bigger fan. If I see a Kotke post, I'm like, click. I love him. I mean, not that you don't. I know what you're saying. It's just a different vibe, but he's not definitely not on my cut list. But he's been doing this thing lately where it does the there's these all these posts like every day. It's like four links. Thursday noonish or whatever. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
They're just the headline. And I kind of like it, but it seems like, I don't know, not my favorite experience. I like the context that he provides, and there's no context in these link dumps. So, but yeah. You know, this probably isn't as appealing to you as a Windows person, but I know Reader only works on iPhone, iPad. So, and NetNewsWire does too. You may be interested. It also syncs with Feedbin. Feedbin seems like the new hub. You know, like whether you use it for its actual app or not, it syncs with lots of stuff. So it's good that way. And NetNewsWire is nice, although I tried it on iPhone and I think they did a good job, but Reader's still ahead. But what's appealing to me is that NetNewsWire on my Mac is really good. It feels like, you know how this is a little Steve Jobsy in the chair too, but some apps like just feel like Mac apps, like they adhere to the vibe of that spirit. Does that have for Windows too? Like this feels like a Windows app.
Yes and no. I would honestly say that's one of Windows's biggest problems, because if you think of like Windows Vista, there's still apps out there that look like that, you know, like old tech. And like one, I use this thing called Riot Image Optimization. It's for image optimizing. It's basically Image Optim, but kind of a less good looking. But it also does like PNG alpha or whatever alpha, like the changing to PNG.
Look like a Windows app or not, or is it weird?
It looks really much like your stereotypical Windows app you downloaded from a shareware site, and then there's this whole section of apps in the Microsoft App Store that look like Windows 8, which was a very distinct, like big blocks of primary colors, you know. And they are not great to use, like in my opinion. And then in a lot of the RSS readers are that, because they're coded as some like whatever learn how to program on Windows demo. So a lot of those are RSS readers in the store are from that era. And then now there's this new like Windows 10 UI. I think they call it, what is it? UWP, Universal Windows Program.
Okay.
But it's sort of this Fluent UI, which you've maybe heard like floating around in the design system world. But it's this sort of like mature sort of app-like interface. And not, I would say most apps have not translated over to that yet. So
there's no feed reader in Fluent yet, probably?
Not that I know of, you know, and it would be so cool if there was, but...
So Feedbin... on the desktop. Do you read feed, or do you just feed reading is exclusively in the chair away.
It's just web. I feed bin. I go to the URL in my browser. So, and I can PWA it. And so it'll PWA and I can install it to my desktop. I think I have one and I used to have it in the dock, but not anymore.
Do you newsletter? Do you send your newsletters to Feedbin or do you let them come right to your inbox?
I send my newsletters to Feedbin and it's great.
Me too. I love it.
Unfortunately, I have 10 Cassidus just sitting there, but I know she writes a quality letter.
She's the best. Sometimes, depending on my mood, I'll go right for the joke because she does a joke at the bottom of each one. Good. And they're always real daddy. Cassie, you'd be an excellent father.
You have proven yourself for dadhood.
She's at Netlify now, so congrats there. And we're still writing the Stack Overflow newsletter, so it's an influential person out there. So feed reading, wonderful. I'm on the desktop, largely NetNewsWire, sometimes the Feedbin app, get the newsletters in there, love all this stuff. You have a feed. Feeds are just, they're just not hard anymore, you know? I don't do anything special, hardly, with the feed. Just saying that, the one site that I really have to, like, doctor up the feed for is this podcast. And the reason is because we decided too long ago, and I absolutely do not regret this, is to do all of our data entry for these episodes with advanced custom fields in WordPress, meaning that instead of just like the title and post content, we use the title, but we've moved everything else into custom fields. Like, who are the guests? That's a repeater field, and the repeater field has like guest name and Twitter profile and yada, yada, yada. And the time jump links are its own custom area, and the links from the show are its own custom field. It just feels like that's how the CMS should go. Like, if we were using Craft CMS, we would have had to do that. You design how you want the data to be entered and then enter it in that way. And the WordPress version of like the Craft approach is basically, you know, custom post types with advanced custom fields. It's a nice way to work, but the default RSS feeds have no idea what your custom fields are. That data doesn't just turn into an RSS feed. So you got to get fancy dancy in there and do it. I'd almost think that'd be a nice advanced custom fields plugin, is like some kind of UI or something for put this field in my feed too. But you need to kind of drag and drop almost, because you need to be like, this one should be first and this one should be second and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
That was a lot of info, but.
It's funny. Like, you start using WordPress as a CMS and then you get like another problem and you're like, oh shoot, like I have to go solve that problem. And so. Mm-hmm.
Are you still on Jekyll or did you do the Switcherino?
Oh man, I am on Jekyll, but I have a fully done branch of migrating to 1.1.0, which is great. But do you want to know what my
actually slower somehow?
It was slower, but like by like 0.5 seconds or something. Oh, it should be a who cares, but Dave Rupert. Scumbag Dave Rupert does think about that. And just from like the difference was like, if you hit save, you wanted to happen as quick as possible. When you hit save, the site recalibrates and I had tuned Jekyll so hard that it was very, very fast. I think I can get 1.1.0 to that speed or whatever. But I was also waiting for my new computer or like new Windows update. So I'm now on WSL2 on my big machine. I can give you those numbers. Are you ready? Yeah. Jekyll before was 8.9 seconds. So 9 seconds.
Every time compile. You hit save.
Every time I hit save, or this is for build. So I guess saving would be a little faster, but building. Mm-hmm. And so now, and then 1.1.0 was 6 seconds. So 1.1.0 was faster before.
Okay.
But now my Jekyll on my big machine is 1.1 Holy seconds. Crap. And 1.1.0 is 2.3 seconds to build the whole thing. Again,
massive improvement, but still it's
massive improvement, like 3-4x
just because your operating system changed.
Well, like the whole, the way Windows does Linux all changed. And so, but it, so now it's in kind of like a, and they call it, I think, like a micro VM or something like that. But it's basically a VM that's running on your machine. But it's very like tiny. It's not like spinning up a Docker or anything like that. It's just, it's very, very quick and fast to like happens in 200 milliseconds or something like that. But anyway, these are all like, you know, I'm splitting hairs over a second, you know, like, I really shouldn't, because there's things I want to do. Like, I want to start getting into like GitHub Actions and running auto running my site through Lighthouse and things like that. Dude. And that's stuff that if I'm in the Node ecosystem is just easy. Like it's built for that. Right. But if I, you know, put my code up and do a GitHub action, well, now I got to do all the Ruby crud to get the Ruby gems to make my site. And that's okay. Like I can do that, but then I got to do the Node stuff too. So I'm like balancing two worlds.
Yeah. I'm
like trying to like smash two systems into a CI. And so I don't want to do that. You know, I want to get out of that lifestyle. And so
Ruby's just an endless trouble, unfortunately, as much as we both kind of have our sweet spots for it.
I love it, but it's like, if I can get out of it, like if there's a way, like, I still don't think there's I tried out Redwood because we had Tom Preston Werner on, and I liked Redwood quite a bit. And like, it did give me like Rails feels, but there's still not like a Rails in JavaScript completely. This is pretty close, but like it is, you know, so if I was building an application, I would still maybe choose Rails and Ruby. That puts me in a big Ruby ecosystem and probably only deploying to Heroku because that's the only thing that really understands it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's in a Docker and stuff, it seems like a little like safer. It's right. It's like, I think you get the most trouble when it's like, I'm just going to run it just on my main machine, just off global Ruby and use RBNV and all, you know, then you're like,
well, if
it's
isolated,
it's cool. Yeah, you're going to have. So you're still tempted to switch despite the slowness?
You know, yeah. I mean, it's a second or, you know, or some, let's say 1 second, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like if I can move into my wheelhouse, like there's a lot I can do from there. You know, I've seen like Wes Boss, you know, he does like auto-generated thumbnails for every post. I don't really want to get that like deep.
Ooh, I do.
But I just thought like, you know, that would be something I could do if I had just a NPM or a Node wheelhouse. You know, if I want to just stick in one wheelhouse, basically.
Right.
Simplify that. So I will probably switch and I just need to pull the trigger. I was really waiting on the Windows update to kind of come through.
Which one do you think will get incremental builds first? I mean, that's what really unlocks the speed, you know?
They both have them now. So Jekyll has it on by default in Jekyll 4, I think, because it does like a bunch of cached building. You'll see a Jekyll cache folder if you build it. Mm-hmm. And that's like where all the speed's kind of coming from. And it uses Liquid C. So your Liquid is run through a C binary, not through a JavaScript C or Liquid library, a JavaScript Liquid library. Small thing there, but I think that is literally the speed difference. That said, I know 11D has incremental in beta now, or like you can just turn on the flag. I don't think they promote it that much, but
yeah, that's so big. That would, you know, the sites I use it on are, you know, they build, you know, 25 files or whatever. Like this new Christopher Schmidt site I'm working on is like maybe as we'll end up having maybe 100 high end and. It's real fast, but you have a lot more than that. Blog posts over, you know, you don't want to see it build all of them every time. It's just like not useful use of CPU cycles.
Yeah, it does. When you see it happen, do everything on save, you're like, well, that was a waste.
Yeah.
I could have told you what to build.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by X-Team.
gotta check this out. This is so cool. It's literally x-team.com. Love dashes and domain names, of course, by the way. But the idea is that, so let me explain it. You can hire them. They have this tribe of developers, and those developers, they'll, you know, parachute in and help your team do stuff. You know, like, gosh, I need some more developer help on this thing. Where do I turn? Go to X Team and you hire them to help you build your thing. That's cool, but that's almost not what I'm talking about here. They're also looking for developers to join their team to be one of those developers that goes and helps other people. You know, it's a completely 100% remote company. And so by parachuting, I mean, literally, like figuratively, you know, like you don't actually parachute in, you just help them remotely. And you help them scale. So if a company's like, yeah, we got to scale right now, they're going to reach out to X Team and you're going to be one of those developers that goes and helps those companies, which help really awesome companies like Riot Games, who make like League of Legends. Wouldn't that be cool? Kaplan, Coinbase, Fox Broadcasting, Beachbody, all kinds of, you know, like who knows what you're going to work on, but they have a bunch of cool clients. So chances are you're going to work for multiple of those cool clients. So you can, if you choose, live and work in one of their roaming hacker houses, probably not right at the moment with the pandemic and all, but that's a thing that they have. That it changes locations monthly. And I don't know, it just gives you a chance to explore the world, explore beautiful locations, take part in their adventures, and, you know, share passion of coding with the people you live with. Pretty darn cool. There's all kinds of great benefits too. Like they give you $2,500 a year just to like spend on doing things that you love to be healthy and energized and all that. You know, go to conferences, you know, buy some video games, buy some cool photography equipment. $2,500 of just like bonus bucks to spend on stuff. That's pretty cool. Anyway, X Team seems very cool. I guess check them out for either reason. Do you need to get some devs on your team real quick? You know, you hire them to do that. But the important thing is, does that lifestyle sound cool to you? Do you want to be a part of a team that does that? Go do it. Apply. Be a developer like that. Sounds awesome to me. I have Windows. Windows 10 is still the latest Windows, right? Show my ignorance
Windows
here.
Windows 10 is the latest. May 2020 update is the latest, which is, you know, it's Windows 10, but it's really like Windows 10.10, if that makes sense. So like, they don't really advertise those version numbers, but like it's literally like generations ahead of Windows 10 when it came out. So
okay. Well, I own a copy of Parallels, which is this, you know, Mac software for running VMs, which is funky, right? Because you're like, why don't you just use VMware? It's free, you know, and there's other ways to do that, or virtual box, you know. But I like Parallels just because it was, I don't know, it just seems a little like smoother or something. And it has some niceties that just does it for you. Like if you want to use your microphone, fine. It just works somehow. I don't know. It just like detects stuff. You plug in a USB thing and it like pops up this thing. It's like, do you want to connect it to Windows or your Mac? Pick and remember. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of interesting that way. And, you know, all the networking stuff just kind of works between the two, which is kind of cool. It has a shared desktop. So, like, the stuff on my desktop on Windows is the stuff on my desktop on my Mac. It's like,
oh, wow.
Kind of cool.
It's kind of miraculous. Yeah.
And it, you know, keeps stuff in sync that way. And I bought a copy of Windows 10 just like 2 weeks ago just to run it in there. And I did it for video gaming reasons because I wanted to play this game. But it's theoretically, it works on Mac too. This is an old school video game. I'm probably will talk about it more at some point because I think it's kind of interesting. It's so old school that it's text-based. It's literally one of those games where you're like north, northeast, you know, get broadsword from my sheath, attack hobgoblin kind of game, you know?
Whoa, what game?
It's called Gemstone 4, and it's literally debuted in 1988, and it's still online. It still has an active player base today. It's, you know, 30 plus years of stuff, and it's a paid game. It's MMORPG. You know, everybody's logged into the same instance. There's a couple of different instances based on, like, do you want to buy the expensive one? There's like a no rules version where you can kill each other and all that, but for the most part everybody's logged into the same instance of the game and playing it. These days, though, it's evolved, like not a lot, but a little, right? Like, so one of the expectations these days is that scripting has got so good for it. So if you want to move from one place in the game to another place in the game, it might be 100 rooms away. That's a lot of movement, you know, go hallway, open door, go, you know, that kind of stuff. It's all scripted. So you type semicolon, go to, and then like a room ID or something. And the script, which is a Ruby script, will run and move you to the right room. But there's thousands and thousands of these scripts, you know? And so you have to get it installed. And it's not only that these scripts run, it's also the script is connected to a server online. And so that's how players chat with each other in-game through this script running, and these scripts do all kinds of fancy stuff. So it has to be running. You start up the scripting engine and then play the game through it. And it's all in Ruby, but it was written a long time ago. There's not like a lot of active maintainers of this project. So I'm trying to install it on my Mac, but it, like, I think it worked in Ruby 2.5 and then broke in 2.6 and somebody made a patch, but now Ruby 2.7 is out and has protected variables and yada yada. There's a problem, but it's not a deep problem. It's just like, one gem is too new and you got to roll it back or something. So I cannot get it running on my Mac. I just don't have the Ruby chops to figure out what the heck it is. But of course, it works a little better on the Windows side because everything, you know.
Wow, okay.
So that's why I buy Windows and run it to spin up and play the game. I haven't given up on my Mac yet, but I'm willing to play on Windows for now, you know.
So this is why you DM me on like Saturday morning asking me about RBW files.
Yeah, because an RBW is a Ruby like executable.
Yeah, like almost like a EXE or something, or a DLL or something. Yeah.
Right, but I was running Parallels, and Parallels, unfortunately, is too smart. So it saw that RBV, and it wanted to open it with Xcode on the Mac side. It was, like, interfering too much. And Dave had me... You solved my problem, by the way. You had me install this Ruby installer thing, which then kind of Windows is like, don't worry, I'll handle these RBW files now. So double-clicking it performed the correct action, and I was able to get in, so...
Danger, man. That's cool. Well, that's fun. That's big nerd stuff, man. You're like,
oh man, you don't even know.
Ruby based, like, I don't know, a dungeon crawler.
Right.
I know a lot of the like WoW used to use Lua, which was kind of Ruby esque, I believe.
Oh, that's how you could script WoW.
That's how you scripted WoW. So there's like a lot of kids with just intense amounts of Lua knowledge, you know?
Yeah.
And Lua maybe isn't.
Did
ultra
you do
practical
WoW
outside
at all?
No, I never did.
Once?
I just so no, never once. I just know it's a time sink. It's a grind game, you know, and I've fallen into those grind game pits, and I have to tell myself no, because that's Dave Rupert is cool, but I also like get mad at myself. Like my biggest thing, I'll go into a World of Warcraft. You're a StarCraft player, so you get it, but like I go into a World of Warcraft like bender, or it's not World of Warcraft bender,
right?
Every once in a while,
like Warcraft 2 or 3 or
like 3, yeah, 2 or 3. That was like my like I like this, like I like the older one because it's just simple, right? Like it's less crud, and you know,
2
but
was
like,
funner than 3, I think. 3 had the heroes, that was weird. Anyway.
Heroes and like introduced like the tree orcs or whatever they were. But what I like about it, or I liked playing it, but I would inevitably get to a place where I spent all Saturday on a level and I did not have a good save point and I lost. I'm in a lose state at my last save point. You know what I mean? And so I'll waste like a whole Saturday or whole weekend on Warcraft, and then and I'm just like never again. And so that lasts about 10 years. That banish, I'm banished from the realm for 10 years.
It's got to be the journey though, because I look at video games and like there is no end state of this game that means anything at all, nothing. So whatever the journey is, it has to be enjoyable on the way. In this gemstone game I'm talking about, there is no ending of it. It's just no. It's just you. There is a level cap. Like WoW, you get level capped, and then you can still kind of play, and the game tries to find you reasons to not cancel your subscription, you know? Like, is there end game dungeons that are still fun? And can you? But a lot of it comes from, there's other people there. So if you're inclined to role-playing, that will keep you there. There's events that will keep you there. There's your ability to help other people, and your knowledge of the game mechanics is interesting. I mean, I'd almost promise you there's almost no game more complicated than this one I'm playing right now. I mean, it's 30 years old, written in Ruby, you know, like it, the mechanics of the game. And now I'm starting to be involved, right? So I'm on the Discord, chatting with people in game. I'm supporting their Patreons and talking with them that way. I got all these email threads going. I'm talking to the people who make the game still, just because I wanted to just like dig into this, because it was a formative part of my youth was playing this game. And I'm like, I'm back, baby. Having fun.
I'm like looking at a picture of like a meetup or a conf or something, and it's like all people over 35. It's like 100% over 35. That's cool.
But the journey to me is the understanding of these mechanics in a way. And the community is so small that I'm finding it unbelievably nice. Like, it's almost like people's goal in life is to be helpful in here for the most part. And it kind of, it's making me nostalgic and of like almost like way earlier web days. Whereas I'm like, nah, it's not like the community's bad, but it's kind of bad. You know, like it's definitely not as fun. It's not like, we're all in this together. Let's solve problems together. Let's help each other as a matter of course.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I play, D&D like on, I used to play online with, Lon Ingram and Sue. I forget Sue's last name, Death Bear Brown on Twitter. She's a very talented developer, but, this guy Bill and a few other people, Kyle Farron, we used to play online, and then that group kind of disbanded, as D&D groups do. And then, we went over and started playing in person with friends, and then Corona hit. And so then we kind of had to go on to Zoom. And so it's fun, but I like the, I've discovered, I like the group storytelling aspect of D&D. And then you roll some dice to add some luck and unexpected events into the story. And so but it's like discovery, and I'm really bad at all the investigation stuff. Like the DMs will be like, do you want to investigate anything or whatever? And I'm like, no, I'll just walk through that door, I guess. So,
I hate to say this, but it kind of bugs me about the D&D world is that you need a really talented DM to make it work. And what I like about the online, the MMORPG thing is that it's like that. It has the role-playing aspects. You're still literally talking and acting and smiling and jumping. And, you know, there must be 10,000 verbs in this game I play, you know. But that there's a game engine behind it. So you don't have to literally roll dice to see if you killed the monster. There's a combat mechanic still involved, that it's like you are literally fighting this monster, you know. There's no person's opinion that's like, okay, you won, I guess.
Right. It's kind of more, I think that's interesting, because you're playing strictly against sort of the machine. You're playing against the machine.
And I could see not liking that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the in-person aspect of D&D is also wonderful, you know? Like, that's real.
There's some flexibility, and it depends on the DM too. You're right that it all hinges on that person, because like I've heard, you know, people say like, oh, my DM's like kind of, you know, has all these extra rules or what, you know, the guy I play with is very good, but I think he enjoys the kind of rules, like you can't do that because of this, you know, and that's fair, because I think a game is a system of rules, you know, that's what games are.
Right.
And so,
but you got to enforce them in the right way. You know, that turned me off a little bit too. When you're creating a character, you do rolls for your strength and your dexterity and all that. And then you write the number on a piece of paper. It's like, I'll write the number. Right. I'll write whatever number I want on a fucking piece of paper.
And the more you play, it's just make up a note here. Use 13, 12, 15. Or like people just, oh, you're playing a monk. Use like a 13, 18, 9, 7, 9 or whatever.
You know, this is a part of my childhood, right? I was Oh, this is so fascinating. I was a kid, middle school, early high school, all this. I had a brother, and my brother's roommate was this guy, one of the Raffle brothers, and Raffle brothers made Raven Software, and Raven Software made Hexen and Heretic, and these all baller Doom-like
dungeon crawler
Windows
games.
Yeah. They were really good, and they're still around today. They make Call of Duty, for Christ's sakes. Which is amazing. So Raven is a big name now. And, you know, so Steve was just this guy that worked at the print shop with my stepdad, you know, like pulling screens, making t-shirts and crap. And he's like, oh, I'm also a computer genius. So there's that. So this kid comes to town, my age, starts at my middle school, kid from California, kind of rough and tumble. I'm a baller from California. It sucks I have to live here in Wisconsin. Meh. But then you realize he's just a kid and he's cool and he's a nerd.
He's just a Californian. I think you just described California.
Yeah. And he starts to embrace it, whatever. Name's Jeff. His dad came to town because he was going to work for Raven Software. And then it turns out they split ways or whatever. But he's like, well, my whole family's here in Wisconsin now, and I have all these connections. I'm going to start my own computer game business. Gets a contract with Wizards of the Coast owns D&D now, but at the time D&D, it was somebody else. Yeah. Who was the original creators of D&D? They're in Wisconsin,
the guy?
Too. There's Gary Lomax or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Gygax. But this is post that. You know, there's a company. Anyway, whatever. He gets the contract with his original company to make the very first Windows app for character creation. So you'd buy this app in which to ultimately, your goal is to print out, you know, what's your character's name? I can't wait.
Oh, I got... Do you want the R. Cochran Birdman Bard named Tiln Barterson from the Barterson family? The Barterson family is a well-known Bardic family. And
so you'd type that in and you'd type your extra stuff. It would roll the dice for you. You'd pick your skills and all that stuff and print it out. And what a, you know... My God, my friend's dad is making the D&D, the first D&D app. It was called Core Rules, I think, too. And the reason you'd buy it is because it was also computerized versions of the Player's Handbook and the Dungeon Master's Guide.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. With all new illustrations and all that cool stuff. So anyway, we were just nerds. And of course, we barely even played D&D. We were into Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
So, sorry, but...
You forsook the game. That's cool.
I don't even remember how I was going there, but there was something nice about like a computer telling you that your character is approved, not like you just kind of figuring it out.
Right. You didn't. Yeah. There's like, I feel like that I just did Roll 20. So we're on Roll 20 which if somebody works at Roll 20, please get in touch with me. I want to help you out big time, with your project. So Roll 20 is kind of the de facto online let's play D&D. And what I decided, I just was like, I don't want to manage the character. This is the same reason I don't play John Madden football games or whatever. I don't like the managing. I do spreadsheets all day at work. I don't want to do spreadsheets when I'm playing. So I just did the like their character builder because I just was like, I just want it all automated. Like, and if I don't get what I want, that's fine. I'm not going to actually care. Cause I just really like, I don't want to like manage spreadsheets like you're saying, or enter wrong numbers or make those up. I just want it done for me. So,
I don't know. And then computer games that don't have any element of randomness and, you know, the MMORPG thing is just a big deal to me, that there's other people there too and they're experiencing it with me is a big deal. So do you have any, you didn't do WoW, but I once knew a kid who said everybody's got one good MMORPG in them. You only get one.
That's a good, I don't know that I've found mine yet. Other than possibly Overwatch, which is a shooter game. But it is like you're like, slowly, you're not like adding, but like I do it for a long time and it directly involves you with five other randomized people who are just terrible human beings. So it's just, so, you know, there's all that, but I think that would be like the, that's maybe my biggest, longest sort of like MMO, you know, or just EverQuest, multiplayer game.
Remember that one?
Never did that. Never. Cause again, I've lost friends to EverQuest, you know, the guy who like,
don't want to hang out anymore.
Wouldn't hang out. Cause they like had a guild meeting or whatever, which is fine. I'm not, no judgment zone. I just know the time sink, which is credit to the game. Like it's actually pretty,
that's a big deal. That hard. Yeah. And that you pay monthly to do it. So I bet the economics of it are great. Like I bought the Final Fantasy VII remake and playing through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it was $60, something like that. That's a lot of money, you know, for a video game. My God. And I've been looking through because I have the PlayStation 4. Like what other game? Some dumb game where you like drive trucks really slowly. But it looks good enough, like literally like really slowly. Like you're stuck in mud and you have to like get out. And
is it Death Stranding? Is that the game?
Maybe. It looked good, but it was also like $60-$70. I'm like, are you kidding me? To drive trucks slowly? That's crazy. But anyway, so you get $60 out of you. Poo, screw that. WoW gets $30 out of you every month for years. That's for way years, more profitable, you know?
Well, that's what the rule number one is, never pay for video games. I think that's like, you just gotta never pay.
Sure. Good luck with that. Can you even pirate a PS4 game or an Xbox game? I don't even know if it's possible.
I'm sure it is possible, but we don't talk about that on this show.
No, I'm just fascinated by it in general. What do you?
It's for shoptalk.tor.
Shoptalk at night.
Shoptalk.onion or whatever those websites are.
Hey, Shop Talk Show listeners, this episode is brought to you in part by Jetpack. Man, they've been doing some cool stuff lately. You know Jetpack, right? It's a plugin for your self-hosted WordPress site that brings you the powers of Automattic, you know, all kinds of powerful cloud-based stuff. You know, we've talked about that a bunch of times. But so there's lots of stuff that Jetpack can do, but they've been moving more towards a pay-for-what-you-need model. So, for example, they have search, right? I use it on our sites. I use it on CSS Tricks as awesome search that happens like off your site, in the cloud, indexed by Elasticsearch. You have a bunch of control over it. Super powerful. Absolutely love it. That's like a la carte, meaning you can just buy it. You know, you had a la carte lunches at... That's why I always think of that. In like middle school, it's like you could just get like a tray lunch and you just get to have whatever they have. Or you could buy like just an apple for a dollar, or like just a slice of pizza for $1.50, you know? I don't know why. It's what I think of. You can like just buy search if you just want search and you want to Jetpack to do nothing else for you. But they have new ones, you know? So there's backup is the same way. Like you just want backups from your WordPress site and it backs up everything, your database, your files, your media, everything. Super trustworthy. Love that. You can just buy that if you want. And their brand newest one is Jetpack Scan. So if you're just concerned about the security of your WordPress site, which Jetpack does a bunch of stuff anyway for, but this is like, it's literally looking at the files and the database of your site to make sure there's no problems. And if it detects problems, it lets you know if there's problems. And most of those problems you can fix with a click. Like it knows how to repair it and does. How cool is that? So Jetpack Scan, if you just want that, if you're just like, I need more security for my WordPress site, you can just buy it. $7 a month. Pretty cool. Thanks, Jetpack. All right. Well, we're 40 minutes in and we barely talked about websites at all. But, you know, speaking of Windows stuff, that there's some things to talk about there. Somebody asked us about... You know, the fact that Microsoft bought GitHub, that was like a big deal thing. And then sometimes big deal things like that happen. They bought NPM too, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of forget about it, you know? Or you know, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But in this case, I feel like the world largely has. I mean, once in a while, people get mad because, you know, right now it's like, well, GitHub had that ICE contract. So Microsoft has an ICE contract. That's not cool, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean... I assume that's all. I'm still an issue. It seems like GitHub's maintained a decent amount of autonomy. You know, it's not like rolled into Azure or something like that. And they just had that global GitHub global, I guess is what it's called, but where they put like VS Code inside GitHub. Did you see that? The code spaces thing?
Oh, right. Right.
If you're in GitHub, you can just be like,
they had it before. That was kind of a rebranding of something they already had in a way.
Yeah, but it's just kind of the like online editor, which is just interesting and cool. Like that could, again, I'm Dave Rupert. I'm maybe more traditional, but like I have no desire to like manage code in a web browser that's going to crash on me. But for some reason, if I manage code in a web browser that's inside an app on my system, I'm just fine with that. But in a tab, I feel I'm just going to close it by accident or something like that. But
it's funny how the perception of that can be so different. Like to this day, we don't use a web app to record this show because I don't trust it. I just don't have that level of trust to get the.
I do a podcast that does do in a web app and mixed results. We've had a couple crashes and like that would be detrimental for us, you know, like mm-hmm. if we had a guest and who, you know, is a billionaire. But
sometimes cloud stuff like that is you trust it more because you're like, I don't know, at least it's in the cloud. At least I don't have to be responsible for this text, you know, somebody else's.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Like in theory, it could be the perfect solution, like, you know, local backups, online backups, all that stuff. And then just get synced or diffed or something. But it's weird. It's not. Or it doesn't feel stable. But one thing I'm looking for, do you have this on any of your GitHub discussions? Have you seen this?
Isn't it? No, I haven't. I think I knew that it was coming and it felt like, remember they bought Spectrum.chat or whatever? And Spectrum.chat feels like it's spinning down. And
oh, really? Okay. I haven't heard that, but
it seems unmaintained and they have a big button that's like migrate this community elsewhere, which basically just turns it off.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I'd seen like they had like a discussions product or something that was kind of more like at the organization level or something like that. But now I think you're getting into the repo level and it's only available on like open source products or whatever.
Okay.
But I think eventually it's going to go to the like private repo level too. I don't know that for sure.
Is it like forums essentially?
It's basically forums, but it's like the perfect thing for like RFCs, like request for consideration. Like this is not an issue. This is just a discussion. Cause you know, you guys use Notion or whatever, but
yeah, like, we get that all the time. I'd say most things I open up on other people's products are not actual bugs. They're like what ifs.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, and so it's like I just want to Hey, I'm curious. What if we did this XYZ or something like that, or you know, we're building a little side project at Paravel, and it's just like, you know, I'm just like, oh, we need to think about like, you know, the onboarding experience or something like that, you know? And it's like, that's not what we need to do now, but here's like my 10 ideas for the onboarding experience or something. Like, I'm just dumping ideas here. We can talk about them at a later date, but they don't need to be issues. Cause if you put too many issues in your issue feed, and we just went through it this morning, like you just like we pared it down from like 28 to something like 14, and it's just a breath of fresh air, right? Like when your backlog is like manageable, it's just, you're just like, oh, I can actually work on this. Like I see what's going on, you know? That's kind of an argument for no backlogs or whatever, but like being able to like digest what needs to happen is such a big deal. So, I'm really like, I'm keep like Googling and like, when is this whole issues or discussions thing coming to projects? But it seems to me like GitHub, since the Microsoft thing, and I don't know if money or autonomy or management KPIs or whatever the thing is, it seems like they're able, like the things I see leaking out, like redesigns of the repo or redesigns of the issues, like, or notifications and stuff like that. Like all that stuff is starting to happen. And it seems like they have, I guess, investment into improving the product. Whereas before, like, it seemed like for a good 5 years, GitHub was just like keep the lights on, you know, and there were even like a few like outbreaks, like, hey, we need, you know,
help
reactions or something. Oh, we need help, you know, like I think Cinder Sorhus or whatever, who is prolific and has 20,000 repos, was just like, hey, I need help. Like, I can't do it here if you can't do it. So anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems good. Like, it seems largely positive. That's the vibe I get too, you know. I don't think they're going to.
And then GitHub Actions is a big thing, you know. I'm sure that it's going to be like, oh,
that's where the world now is turning. Just, this. Like, do your DevOps here for free, you know.
Do DevOps here and, oh, what? You want to deploy to Azure? Go ahead. Here's a button. Click the button.
Yeah. So. I like that. I like tight integrations when you can, especially when it's like tight integrations that are possible. And optional, you know, like the product is still good, but if you wanna, that's cool. We're looking at Azure DevOps at CodePen because it's just really good.
We use I use for a client Azure DevOps, and I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's like what's nice is it's integrated, like your repos, your issues, your work items, that's all in the same thing. Like that's all in the same hub, and you can have multiple projects in the same hub. And the PR, you can build pipelines, like it's all visual, add some visual stuff. It's not just like, you know, guessing. So
we solved an issue just this week. Alex did. He's just been on a tear doing all kinds of cool stuff of provisioned a Azure container that has a GPU on it so that we can detect whether a pen is using WebGL or not. And send it to that instance to take a screenshot, because if your computer doesn't have a GPU, it won't render WebGL and you won't get a screenshot. But that's a pretty specific scenario, you know?
Wow, yeah.
But it's turned out Azure made that the easiest possible choice, which is pretty rad.
Wow. So that's kind of cool. You just kind of test like if GPU gets used or whatever.
We have a couple other tests like that already. Like if it's an animated pen, it needs to wait a little longer and stuff like that, and have longer timeouts for pens that are problematic and stuff. It was just kind of a little side journey to get to get our like percentage of pens that take good screenshots really high, you know?
Well, I think that's like the quality work, right? Like that makes or breaks a project or something, because it's, you know, like if I go to there could be a really awesome WebGL demo, but I would never know it from the home screen. I'm not going to click through a black box or whatever, you know, or a white screen or whatever. So those quality fixes are so labor intensive, but so huge for like, you know, we just, this little thing we're building, we had like placeholder images, you know, place hold it or whatever.
Yeah.
And we went through, we made a fake website. took a bunch of screenshots, like made a fake whole Shopify, took a bunch of screenshots and like loaded up these images. And like, they're like real images, and it just made a huge difference. It just like, it was just like, oh my gosh, this is, I love this, you know, like it turned it from like a C to a, you know, and some,
that's cool.
So it's that those little quality buffs make a big difference. So.
Let's do one question.
Hey, one question, because we are a question and answer podcast. Let's see. Rory O'Connor writes in a Jamstack scenario where the initial page content is very basic, what are some strategies to deal with page jank when user-specific content is added asynchronously? For example, a splashy full page width banner that appears only for the first time visitors, perhaps advertising a discount.
So the point, it's a little weird to wrap your head around right away, because Jamstack usually implies that things are pre-built, but you can't often pre-build like user specific stuff, right? Like Dave Rupert's avatar is like, that's dependent on him being logged in. You can't pre-build that onto the page, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you CSS'd wrong and the avatar was just not there at all in the DOM, and then some AJAX request happens, gets the avatar and plunks that IMG tag into the DOM, things are going to move around. So the trick is to like I don't know, use your experience as a experienced web page builder to build things in a more resilient way that doesn't have jank, you know?
Yeah, no, it's tough. The one trick, at least I'm using a lot of right now, is that when we talked about it when Jen Simmons was on the show, using height and width attributes on your images.
Yeah, there you go.
So the browser like will draw a box as quick as it can. So if you're talking about injecting, like, you know, you're loading the page and then you're like, oh, is, and it seems like you're like, oh, is this person not have a cookie? Cool. We're going to drop a cookie and throw up a discount banner. When you can do that pretty quick. I mean, if you can do that, like, you know, right after where it's going to show, like in line in the DOM, like that would be great. But let's say you can only do it at the bottom. If you can do an inline script, that would be great too. But if you can only do it like in the bottom from another file, like there's not much you can do there because the page will hopefully paint, especially in a Jamstack situation, the page will paint and then you'll like your script will execute. But like if you give the browser everything it can, like these height and width things and stuff like that, so any image that shows up, it like takes the amount of space it's actually going to take. I think that makes a huge difference. So if you can like that's going to be the biggest thing. Or, but if you can also like run that code, like even make a web component or something, shoot, and just like put like the code you need in this like whatever first visit widget or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. first-visit.widget, and then you like check for a cookie inside of there and render it as quick as you can. Like you could do that with a web component, like right in line, like just very quickly, and then just render DOM immediately. But again, I don't know.
It's kind of the theory of a skeleton component.
Sort of, yeah, just a skeleton, or like deliver it as quick as possible, or get it to bundle that code, I guess, or get it in the in the right place as quick as possible. So.
This makes me think of this is like, I'm hoping that there's less of this client side asking for content, even if it's user specific in the future, and that you can still have architecture like this, but teach a server to do it on the fly instead. You know, I think that's last week or many weeks I've been talking about Cloudflare workers, but that like they're just early in a good one in the game, but I think a lot of things are starting to make this possible, that like just, you know, that you hopefully like at the edge level you can teach our web request to be like, oh, I see, this is Dave asking for this page, I'm gonna grab his stuff from APIs and such and his avatar or whatever and just manipulate this request before it even gets to the server that has all that stuff in there, before it even gets there. Because it's just going to be good perf that way. Like it will definitely be faster. It'll be faster for it to make those requests to those APIs because it's this mega fast cloud computer thing. And it'll be faster because for the browser to render because it's got everything it needs once it gets there. Like it just seems like the future. I know the world isn't like 100% ready to do it for everything, but if you can explore it, you should.
No, I think the like edge functions, you know, if you're already Jamstacking there, like that's Netlify has them. So like just you can do that, spin it up on Netlify. But that would be an awesome example. Cause you have the cookie in the request header or whatever. Like the cookie's there. So like
or it might be in the URL, you know, it might be because I don't know, just is somehow, or like it might be a JWT or whatever, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, you could just totally be like, nope. That's a new person. I'm just gonna spit this out. So that's cool. That's a perfect example. So
yeah. All right. Well,
want to use the edge.
We did it. This was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Hopefully, everyone enjoyed a little online role playing. This is our online role playing episode edition of Shop Talk Show. Thank y'all for downloading this in your podcast of choice. If you play any weird niche video games, let us know, man. What's your MMO? That's the question.
Yeah.
Hit us up on Twitter. I'll definitely look at them, if not download them. So there you go. So, and so thank you for downloading this, Starheart favorite up. Find out, That's how people find out about the show. I can't talk anymore. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show, tens of tweets a month. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one. Since people want to hire people like you. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Go to shoptalkshow.com